John Wicks of the Records, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we are going to hear from the Reverend Richard Witt of Rural Migrant Ministries about why farm workers should get paid overtime at 40 hours a week like everybody else, like grocery workers like you and me. 40 hours a week is when overtime kicks in, but for farm workers in New York State, for some reason, it's at 60 hours. The state labor department wants to change that. We'll see if Governor Kathy Hochul signs off or not on that. But we'll hear from the Reverend Richard Witt from Rural Migrant Ministry about the issue today on the WGXC Morning Show. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the
network.
Turn out for the Deep in the Valley show Saturday, August 20th, put on by WGXC volunteer programmer Andy French, who does the Crawl Out from the Fallout show once a month on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on WGXC, and his Raven Sings the Blues organization, with performances from Chris Forsythe, Ryan Jewell, Bill Nace, Wet Tuna, and others, Saturday, August 20th from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook. That's the Deep in the Valley show, Saturday, August 20th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that three brothers from Greenville are being celebrated as heroes for saving the life of a man trapped in a burning car. Peter LaQuarry IV and Nicholas LaQuarry, both 14, and their brother Dylan LaQuarry, 7, were honored by the Greenville Volunteer Fire Company on August 9th for their courage and life-saving actions following a crash on State Route 32 on August 7th. Four people were injured when a sedan and minivan collided, and fire department officials said it could have turned fatal if not for the LaQuarrys. quote, without them, it would have been much different situation, unquote, said Clifton Powell Jr., chair of the Greenville Fire District Board of Commissioners. Around 7:45 p.m., the boys were headed home for dinner from Southwesterloo with their dad, Peter LaQuarrie III, when they came upon the accident near the Albany County line. The crash had just happened, and first responders were not yet on the scene. One of the vehicles was engulfed in flames, and the driver was pinned inside. Their father ran to a nearby house in an effort to get water to put out the fire, but when they noticed he needed help, all three boys jumped out of the car and formed a bucket brigade. Quote, they kept the fire from spreading into the driver's compartment, unquote, Powell said. Quote, if they didn't throw water on that car, the driver wouldn't have made it, unquote, said Greenville Fire Chief Kip Drolet. Powell said he cannot remember a time locally when heroes as young as the LaQuarrie saved someone's life. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that Greene County has halted eminent domain proceedings against Hunter Mountain owners after an agreement was reached on a right-of-way issue. On July 20th, the Greene County Legislature voted for a resolution to begin eminent domain proceedings because Vail Resorts, the Colorado resort company that owns the Hunter tourist destination, was not responding to efforts from the county to replace a culvert that carries County Route 83 over the Shanty Hollow Brook in Hunter and an adjacent pedestrian bridge. But on August 8th, Greene County Highway Department Superintendent Scott Templeton told the Greene County Legislature during a public work committee meeting that an agreement was reached with the Vail Resort Company on August 3rd. Templeton told the legislature, and I quote, our right-of-way consultants and Vail Resorts came to an agreement. They mailed the agreement out to Vail, and we should be getting a signed right-of-way clearance from them within days, end quote. Hunter Mountain Resort General Manager Russ Colleton said, and I quote, I am pleased to have this easement done. Hunter Mountain values our relationship with the county, and it's important to us to collaborate on projects like this one. The work to repair leakage and minor concrete deterioration on the culvert will take place next year, end quote. Templeton said, and I quote, we never want to go through eminent domain. That's the last resort, so it's good that we actually got an agreement, end quote. You can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Bill Williams reports for Columbia Green Media that the installation of a box culvert slated to begin on August 22nd will close County Route 18, also known as Fish and Game Road in Claverack, in the coming weeks, said Ray Jerkowski, Columbia County Public Works Commissioner. A box culvert is a reinforced concrete structure used in drainage and road work. The installation is part of a federally funded project, Jerkowski said. Although Fish and Game Road will be open for local traffic while the road work is happening, motorists will be prohibited from traveling through the work zone. The project requires an 8-mile detour for drivers. Orange detour signs, which are currently covered by black plastic, have been installed along the detour route. The area where the box culvert will be installed is just west of Tishauser Road, Jerkowski said. The section of Fish and Game that will be closed through traffic is located between Route 9H and Tishauser Road. Although work begins August 22nd, the box culvert is not scheduled to arrive at the scene before the first week in September. The project is expected to be completed by the end of September. Construction crews are expected to be back at Fish and Game Road to install a second box culvert in 2023, Jerkowski said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Several local Republican politicians denounced a court-approved search warrant of former President Donald Trump's Florida home that the Federal Bureau of Investigation carried out on August 8th. Republican candidate for Governor Lee Zeldin, who, as a member of Congress, voted against certifying the results of the fair 2020 presidential election, wrote on Twitter, and I quote, unprecedented raiding of a former president's home and without any explanation. With each passing hour, only more questions mount. So far, this reeks of abuse, partisanship, and illegitimacy. The burden is on the White House and the DOJ to fully account instantly for this action, end quote. The White House reported they knew nothing of the search, which a court approved. The FBI chief, Christopher Wray, was appointed by Trump. Mid-Hudson News reports that Republican State Assembly person Colin Schmidt
who is running for Congress in the 18th Congressional District, said, and I quote, "The unprecedented raid of President Trump's residence has raised significant questions about the politicalization of the FBI that must be fully and transparently answered by the Department of Justice," end quote. Typically, law enforcement officials don't warn targets of search warrants and only explain their reasons to the court. Liz Joy, a Republican candidate for the 20th Congressional District, also incorrectly claimed that the White House officials were involved in the search. Joy wrote on Twitter, "The Biden administration has gone utterly rogue and has fully weaponized government agencies to do the same. Americans need to stand up and vote for common sense leaders that respect our American values and freedoms on November 8th. We must restore our beloved country," end quote. And Representative Elise Stefanik, the Republican who represents the 21st Congressional District, also misled citizens with her statement that blames the current president, who had nothing to do with the search. Stefanik wrote on Twitter, and I quote, "There must be an immediate investigation into Joe Biden and his administration's weaponizing of the FBI and DOJ against Biden's political opponents," end quote.
And Harrison Guru is reporting for News10.com that, coming on the heels of the recent heat wave across the region, the Farmers' Almanac has released its winter weather forecast for 2022-2023. According to the Almanac, quote, "significant shivers," unquote, are ahead for upstate New Yorkers, spelling out a colder winter than last year. But January is the worst-looking month this winter by far. According to the Almanac, the region should expect heavy rain and snow for the eastern two-thirds of the country, followed by one of the coldest Arctic air outbreaks in years, from January 16th to 23rd. Lows hitting 40 degrees below zero are forecasted for the capital region. Quote, "A cold December and a very cold January might make readers in the Northeast shake and shiver," unquote, the Farmer's Almanac wrote. Quote, "But February will bring milder temperatures that should make winter seem bearable," unquote. The publication's managing editor, Sandy Duncan, said there will be a good amount of snow to accompany those frigid temperatures in the Northeast. Quote, "We are saying it's going to be very cold. The outlook is calling for some unseasonably cold conditions and a lot of snow," unquote, Duncan said. Read more about the story at news10.com.
CNN reports that former President Donald Trump refused to answer questions and invoked his Fifth Amendment rights at a scheduled deposition with the New York Attorney General on August 10th. Trump said in a statement, and I quote, "Under the advice of my counsel and for all of the above reasons, I decline to answer the questions under the rights and privileges afforded to every citizen under the United States Constitution," end quote. Trump has previously denounced anyone who took the Fifth Amendment, saying, and I quote, "You see, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?" end quote. New York Attorney General Letitia James's office is investigating whether the Trump Organization misled lenders, insurers, and tax authorities by providing them misleading financial statements. Posting on social media, the former president said August 10th that the investigation is, and I quote, "a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in U.S. history. My great company and myself are being attacked from all sides. Banana Republic," end quote. The Fifth Amendment says, and I quote, "No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself," end quote. Read more about this story at the CNN website.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Thursday, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 84 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 59 degrees. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 80 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 54 degrees. And that
is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Thursday, August 11th, tune into all sorts of creative community voices on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Including at 10 a.m., Cheryl Kay talks with Ryan Patternite and Jason Feinberg, jazz artists, on the Situation Fluxus show. Then we hear the music of Zimbabwe on the Transformational Listening show at 11 a.m. 2 p.m., it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, the show that takes the week's news headlines and sets them to music from latest hits. Turn on the news at 3 p.m. delves into the raid on the Mar-a-Lago Trump home this week. And then at 7 p.m. it's time for Movies on the Radio, beamed in from Philmont and the Philmont Media Project. At 9 p.m. it's time for Disco 3000 from Andrew O'Connor, beamed in live from Montreal. And the Magic Stranger beams in from Columbia County at 10 p.m. live on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Turn out for the Deep in the Valley show Saturday, August 20th, put on by WGXC volunteer programmer Andy French, who does the Crawl Out from the Fallout show once a month on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on WGXC, and his Raven Sings the Blues organization, with performances from Chris Forsythe, Ryan Jewell, Bill Nace, Wet Tuna, and others, Saturday, August 20th from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook. That's the Deep in the Valley show, Saturday, August 20th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at wgxc.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown. All kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, August 11th. It is 57 degrees in Windham and 64 degrees in Claremont early this morning. Soil has taken a dip and is down to 69 degrees, 4 inches beneath the surface. Today is going to be much like yesterday, pretty comfortable even though it gets hot, reaching 87 degrees by 4 p.m. The dew points will be in the low 60s, so if you stay out of direct sun, you should feel okay. But conditions could change, so just make sure you are ready. Also, toss an umbrella in the car in case you hit some of the isolated showers rolling through before dark. Overnight, it's comfy by 10 p.m., and we see a low of 61 degrees Friday morning before a beautiful day. Low humidity and a high of 84. Cool, clear night will be great for the peak Perseid meteor shower. More on that later. Then Saturday and Sunday are going to have a high of 83 and feel great with some random clouds. Make your plans now. Pollen levels for today will be medium high. Grasses being the only generator this time of year, expect those levels to be about the same for the rest of the week. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:40 a.m., then low tide at 9:34 a.m. High tide again at 3:14 p.m., then low tide once again at 9:42 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 80 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:50 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:55 a.m. Looking way up, we see the peak density of the Swift Tuttle debris field and low cloud cover should make meteor watching really good Friday night and Saturday morning. 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. is predicted to be the best viewing time. Solar wind speed is currently 563 kilometers per second at 8.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently getting better. Fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 60. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Pat Lanan of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hi, this is Miles from Hudson. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Combined with the fact that our nation created more than 500,000 jobs last month, it is clear that our nation is making progress.
Vice President Kamala Harris welcomed the news of inflation cooling in July. The Consumer Price Index showed prices up 8.5% compared to 2021, down from 9.1% in June, but still historically high. There's cautious optimism among economists, as food prices remain up about 10% over last year. Gas prices, however, fell about $1 since mid-June. The House hopes to pass the Inflation Reduction Act this week. A key sticking point between parties is funding to hire 87,000 more IRS employees in order to expand audits. At a Rules Committee hearing, Ways and Means Republican leader Kevin Brady argued the IRS will be weaponized against middle-class Americans.
It is clear in the bill, even with a backlog of 20 million tax returns and an IRS that rarely even answers the phone, that there is 14 times more money here for the army of IRS auditors than there is for customer service.
Democrat Jim McGovern blasted those arguments, noting just 11% of IRS workers are agents.
To say that, to try to deliberately scare people by misrepresenting the truth so deliberately, it's unconscionable.
A recent Reuters Ipsos poll found 2 in 5 Americans are familiar with the Inflation Reduction Act and roughly half supported increasing funding for IRS audits.
If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
Former President Donald Trump has repeatedly taken jabs at those who invoke their right against self-incrimination, but then did it himself in a deposition on Wednesday. The New York Attorney General is investigating his business practices. Trump previously testified about his financial statements under oath. The scheduled deposition came days after the FBI searched Trump's Florida home in connection with an investigation into the handling of classified documents.
I can't imagine them finding a smoking gun in the midst of what they're looking for through the Presidential Records Act.
South Carolina Senator Tim Scott is among the Republicans in Congress demanding answers about the raid. The FBI and Department of Justice have not commented on or released the search warrant to the public. Washington Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler is the latest of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach the former president to lose a primary. 4 decided not to run in this year's midterms. Michigan's Peter Meyer and South Carolina's Tom Rice were handed losses. However, both David Valadao of California and Dan Newhouse of Washington survived their challenges. And next Tuesday's primary, Liz Cheney of Wyoming goes against a Trump-backed candidate. As a vocal critic of Trump, polls suggest Cheney faces an uphill battle. White House officials will meet virtually today with student loan cancellation activists. President Biden said he'll make a decision on whether to approve broad-based debt relief by the end of August. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Slap on the wrist. And it's
There, taking the fifth on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In 2020, a highly suspect U.S. Postal Service slowdown created doubt in the postal system's ability to deliver mail-in ballots. The USPS just announced a permanent division to deal with election mail volume, but will it be enough to restore confidence? Last week, the USPS announced the Election and Government Mail Services Division, tasked with training election mail strike teams in communities in all states and U.S. territories. The USPS says that in 2020, it delivered 135 million pieces of outbound and inbound election mail, with 97.9% of ballots delivered within 3 days, and 99.89% of ballots were delivered within 7 days. Unofficially, there were stories of heroic postal workers who prioritize election mail at the local level to deliver on time. A July 14th release from the USPS trumpets an on-time delivery rate of 94% for first-class mail for its fiscal year fourth quarter. Louis DeJoy, the businessman and Trump donor appointed as Postmaster General, is still in place despite widespread calls for his removal. He points out in the Washington Post that his fiscal remake of the USPS has just begun. In March, Congress passed a $107 billion restructuring plan, which may include the shuttering of 18 sorting plants and shortening local post office hours. Articles and a report by the Postal Service Inspector General's Office are at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at Mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Reverend Richard Witt, who's head of Rural Migrant Ministry. And we've talked to Reverend Witt over the years about, you know, trying to get Farm Worker Bill of Rights, which eventually did pass. But a big issue has been the issue of overtime, and particularly trying to lower the limit from 60 hours to 40 hours, which seems to be supported by the State Labor Department proceedings. But the farmers continue to push back. So, Richard, what is the latest situation with the issue of settling overtime for farm workers?
Oh, it's good to be with you, Mark. The latest is that it's not quite clear what the latest is. The wage board took a vote many months ago to recommend that there be a schedule over the next 10 years to lower the threshold for farm workers in regards to overtime pay from 60 hours to eventually 40 hours. That vote passed, and then the process was that it had to be written up with a report and given to the governor, and in turn that had to be shared for public comment with New York residents. And it's not quite clear whether that report has been given to the governor or not after all these months. And so we're not quite clear what the deadline is. We've been told that the governor is very supportive of this. Clearly, the wage board's supportive of this because they voted in favor of it. However, subsequently, the governor is joined by the lieutenant governor, who had been opposed to lowering the threshold.
As Antonio Delgado, former congressperson representing Upper Hudson Valley.
Right. And when he was in Congress, he was opposed to this. They have embarked upon a statewide tour of listening to agricultural leaders' concerns and interests about agriculture in general in New York. And they're going around the state with different scheduled forums. Obviously, what keeps coming up is the farm worker overtime bill and lots of voices speaking out against it. What we're concerned about at Rural Migrant Ministry is, where are the farm worker voices in this process, and how can their voices be heard? And let's get this done, because every day that goes by is another day where farm workers are being cheated out of their fair and equal pay that other New Yorkers are getting. The other thing I should tell you, Mark, is that the budget that was passed this spring included subsidies, once again, for New York agriculture to cover the cost of cover the increased costs related to overtime pay. So I'm not really clear what the issue is here.
Yeah, and I do remember we had, I believe, discussed that shortly after his pass, and that was, basically a big carrot to the farmer, because seemed to be the general consensus, well, this should, finally lock it up. But the farmers argue, hey, farming is not a 9-to-5, business like, most enterprises. And so therefore, we should, honor and respect the tradition that farm workers get to work a whole lot more hours. And it's really unfair, even though we just got this tax credit, to make us pay them, a little higher wage once they go above 40 hours a week. How do the farmer workers respond to that type of argument?
I think that what we've said all along is that there needs to be an equality in New York State. If certain businesses, the majority of which are required to pay overtime, why is agriculture excluded from that? There is no moral justification for treating them differently. I'm sure that the family-owned pharmacy on the corner would love to say, we can't afford to pay overtime pay, but they're paying overtime pay. And why should the farm workers subsidize the farmers' livelihood? Because that's what's happening right now. And on top of all that, that economic issue is addressed in the budget. The farmers are getting a subsidy. So let's move on and focus on how we all can make New York agriculture strong. And let's have all voices involved in these forums and discussions where the future of New York agriculture is being discussed and explored.
Now, I remember when I worked for the Hunger Action Network, we often looked at, the prices of food in the United States actually tend to be cheaper than other industrial nations. But actually, most of the food didn't go to the farmers, went to the middlemen, the processors, even the supermarkets. But what is the impact of labor costs on, what we're paying at the store for food prices?
Well, labor is the one thing really that agriculture, farmers, growers can have somewhat of a voice in controlling. But labor costs are but a small piece of this, and consumers that we've talked to, and I travel across the state repeatedly, have all said that they would be more than willing to pay a little bit extra if it ensured the just treatment of farm workers. And we've always said at Rural Mega Ministry, this is about the just treatment of farm workers and the just treatment of farmers. We need to make the system work. We can't continue a system that depends for its, one could argue, whether survival or thriving on the backs of one particular population.
Now, of course, we are having a governor's race this November, and it does seem that Governor Hochul has been trying to push off, you know, some, I guess, touchy political decisions until after the election. You mentioned it earlier, but A, is it her actual decision, or is the labor commissioner finally made the decision? But, you know, what's sort of the outside of the timeline for, you know, the governor actually does make the decision, you know, being clear about how she's going to stand on this issue?
The labor commissioner in New York reports to and is in place because of the governor. So ultimately, the governor does have controlling voice and interest in this. And we're very concerned as we look at the upcoming election, because the one candidate running against the governor appears to be making the farm worker overtime issue one of his prime talking points. We have this tendency to really focus on the needs of farmers to the exclusion of focusing on the men, women, and children who are the farm workers. And why can't we focus on all?
So we've been talking with Reverend Richard Witt, Rural Mega Ministries. People want more information about this issue, even weigh in with the governor. How best can they do that?
Yeah, they can always go to our website, www.ruralmigrantministry.org. There's been some excellent pieces in the Daily News editorials about that. They can Google those editorials to get a clear sense. And I would urge that if they're concerned about the just treatment of farm workers, that they reach out to the governor of New York and share their feelings and concerns.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Now on the phone, we've got Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson, who is joining us via Zoom. How are you doing today, Kamal?
I'm doing good. It feels good being on the Wednesday show at 4:30, so I'm happy to be here on WGXC today.
All right, well, we're glad to have you. So you wanted to come on to talk about this, what is it called, 40 folks under 40? Tell us about it.
So, you know, growing up in Hudson and in Columbia County, I've always noticed that, you know, once you hit a certain age, you kind of age out of a lot of the initiatives and programs and the many great organizations that happen in the city. And, you know, once you go away to college and career and everywhere else, it seems like, you know, you're not really thought about anymore. And I noticed other cities do 40 under 40 event where they highlight people doing amazing things in the community, accomplishing so much. And, you know, it's kind of like looking into a forgotten population of people. When you think of Columbia County, especially Hudson, people always criticize the school district. They criticize, you know, some of our local colleges and everything like that. But like in starting this event and really looking at highlighting our young individuals under 40 in the community, it's been like a breath of fresh air to see and hear some of the amazing stories about our neighbors.
Now, is this a City of Hudson initiative, or is this something you're doing on your own?
So I am doing this on my own. You know, I brought it to a couple of different organizations, and these organizations felt, I won't name them, but they felt like we didn't have the population to put this on, so they didn't want to partner. But, you know, it's something I felt strongly about, and because I was getting the response that people thought we didn't have that population to actually get 40 people, and I felt like, you know, I could name 40 off the top of my head. I was like, that this makes it even more important to have this event. And I would say after announcing, I want to say 4 days ago, we're at 150 nominations.
And so it's just for the City of Hudson, or is it for Columbia County?
No, this is countywide. This is a countywide initiative. So we've, you know, we've got nominations from across the county. And I'm happy because a lot of things that, you know, we do in Hudson, people always ask me, like, you know, why can't this be countywide and more spread out? So this is actually one of those initiatives that, you know, I can share with the rest of the county.
So tell people how people can nominate people themselves. So how do you do that?
Yeah, so there's a link on literally all of the media around Hudson. So you can go on my social media, Mayor Kamal Johnson. You can go on, you know, Gossips of Rivertown if you're into that. You can go on MB, you know, everywhere. And you can click the link to nominate. And there's also a QR code that'll bring you to the form to nominate someone. And all you need to do is have your name, email, their name, email, and phone number, and tell us a reason on why you nominate that person. There's 5 days left to nominate people, and then nominations will close on the 15th. And I'm going to hold to that deadline just because the high volume of nominations that we got already, you know, I don't want to extend it after that. And, you know, after that, we have some sponsors who have come on. So shout out to Ginsburg's, the Galva Foundation, the Chamber of Commerce, the Register Star, who we all know that I haven't always been a fan of. So I'm happy to, like, you know, see them extend an olive branch to say, like, going forward, they're, you know, looking to do and promote better things in the community. We just got a new sponsor in Berkshire Taconic. So also, if you're looking to sponsor, reach out to me as well. You know, we're going to have an amazing event. Helsinki Hudson has provided the venue. It's going to be in late October. We're going to have performances, awards. There's going to be speakers, and it's going to be, you know, a red carpet, a real red carpet.
And Helsinki is opening?
So Helsinki is going to open just for this event. Hmm. So they are one of our sponsors as well. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that building after this, but, like, this could very well be the last event held at Helsinki Hudson.
Yeah, I thought you were breaking news there for a moment, but
I'm not sure, but you know, this could very well be. And you know, I'm excited about it. I'm under 40, but I am not, you know, allowing myself to be nominated. So, you know, this is completely not about me. This is about, you know, a need in my community that I really want to see, like, a fresh 40 people just be highlighted.
Yeah, usually these 40 under 40 or 30 under 30 or things are put on by publications that are trying to increase their circulation or get people more interested in the rest of the magazine. Chronogram, I think, does one, maybe Albany Business Review. So why did you think we needed one in Columbia County?
I just watched so many of them happen in other cities. My alma mater, SUNY New Paltz, did one. I was actually nominated on that list. And I just was reading about, you know, all the nominees and things like that. And I look back at Hudson, and there's always, like, that kind of rumor that young people aren't doing great things and are not involved. And I think this event is going to tell a different story. Like, I've seen out of the nominations that we've had local people who have started local businesses like cleaning services. We've had firefighters. We've had a person who works for the Mets and lives in Hudson. We've had, you know, event planners, artists, authors. It's literally across the board. And, you know, nurses and different things like that. And I really like to read the stories on why the person was nominated. And it really shows a different side to our county, especially since, you know, we've been in now almost 3 years of COVID. And, you know, there's so much to complain about, but this is something that is really going to put a smile on people's faces. And it's going to encourage the next generation of people to strive for things because they're going to want to be a part of this in the future. So I'm hoping, you know, I'll do this for a couple of years and be able to pass it on to an organization after I show them, you know, how it's supposed to be done and done right. And then, you know, it'll be something that won't have to be built in the future.
Yeah, the people complain around here and elsewhere, too, I guess, about the Old Boys Network. Mm-hmm. And these kind of things, the one thing they're really good at is, like, you can get a county official who, you know, maybe just gets his friends for whatever things he's doing because he just doesn't even, you know, it might not be intentional, but he just doesn't know the young people that he could have asked to help with this project or volunteer with this project or be chair of this thing, or reporters don't know, you know, that this person existed when they're working on a story about ice cream or something. This person is making homemade ice cream in Copaic. You know, people just don't know that some of these young people exist because they haven't gotten the notoriety.
Yeah. And I think that's the print news. It's been an issue with print news. You know, I know WGXC has a gamut of programming that highlights a lot of young people. But people haven't seen it in print. You know, if someone winning a national award, like we had a high school student win a national language award, and, you know, that should have been front page, but instead they'd rather put something out like, you know, a robbery or anything else like that that's going to be like the attention grab or something that's going to make people click. But people really enjoy the news when it's something good. Everybody's parents always, you know, cut out that article where it was like, you know, your kid's shoveling snow and the paper snapped them or something happened good and the kid's in the paper. And that's like what I would like to see more of.
Yeah, I'll push back slightly that if it bleeds, it leads is the adage.
Yeah.
And I think that's because there's some science to that. They do sell more papers when there is bad news. I think people say they want good news. And I'm all in favor of good news, but if it bleeds, it leads is a long-standing saying for a reason because it sells more papers. But
I think with the social media era, when there is good things and people being highlighted, I usually see more shares and people that actually read the articles. Like when there's bad news, people will just read the headline and then go into the comments to argue. When there's good news, people like actually take the time to read it and share it and actually know a lot about it.
Yeah, there's this restorative justice program in Hudson next week, and that's another sort of attempt to slow down the "I hate you" on social media culture that we have now.
Yeah. And it's all good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff happening and there's room for it. And like now is definitely the time for it. Like I would love to sit down with WGXC and see how you guys can be a partner on this as well. You know, I think this is going to be, I'm not even going to say I think, I know this is going to be the biggest event in our county this year.
And so again, tell people how they can they nominate themselves?
You can nominate yourself, yes. So there's an ad in the Register Star. The link is on the Register Star's page. since I got Tom right in front of me, I would love to see WGXC post the link as well, so they could get it right here on you guys' socials. You know, you can also check my page on Facebook. That's Mayor Kamal Johnson on Facebook, and it's also on MB. It's on Gossips, like whatever is your choice, you know, of media. And I put that in quotes. It'll be there, and again, as well as there's a QR code and stuff like that.
And again, the deadline is August 15th.
August 15th. So you got 5 days. And if you are a local business, you know, and interested in sponsoring the event, we are going to have all of the logos of our sponsors on the poster for when people accept their awards and take pictures. You know, I'll be mentioning the sponsors on every ad and in every interview that we do from now into the event. So there'll be a lot of times. Also, if you're a sponsor that is looking to hire young people as well, we will have information on how you can, you know, get in. Some of these young people can get in touch with you.
All right.
We want to make this a great networking moment as well.
All right. Well, we have you here. We want to ask you a couple other questions about Hudson. I guess the biggest issue in the entire Hudson Valley, maybe in the country, is affordable housing. What is the status on getting some new affordable housing in Hudson?
Yeah. So, right now, I know that the Depot project is the big one, and that's right now going through an application phase for the state. So I know the Galvin Foundation is waiting to hear about that project. On a city level, we are working on some announcements that will be coming out, I would say, in the next month, where we're looking to really put through about 130 units of affordable housing in the city. So right now we're waiting on a contract from some developers, and then we'll be presenting to the council and to the city for support. But that is definitely still the number one goal. If all this takes place and the Depot District takes place, we're looking at about 2.5-3 years from now, adding 200, and I would say 15 units of affordable housing here in Hudson.
That still has to get approved by the council, the planning board,
yes,
and anybody
correct
else?
Yes, the housing that we haven't announced yet is at its very early stages, but we're going to start unrolling stuff this fall. You know, we have hired a housing director, Michelle Tulo, who it's her full-time job to look at housing and any type of initiatives. Another thing that coincides with housing and our housing director is that we are starting Hudson Housing Trust Fund. So that is in its action stages, where the advisory committee and HCDPA will be kind of planning on how we will use $600,000 that we got from an anti-displacement grant to help people out in different housing efforts. So that could potentially be, you know, if you are looking at home ownership and you need help with, you know, that payment to get into the home, that initial payment, or if you have repairs that are needed in your home, helping out with stuff like that. We have the Hudson Roots.